Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Moneyland by Oliver Bullo investigates how vast sums of illicit and ethically tainted money move across borders and quietly reshape politics, property markets, and everyday life. Rather than treating corruption as a distant problem confined to weak states, Bullo traces a global system that depends on respected banks, lawyers, accountants, estate agents, and offshore jurisdictions. The book frames Moneyland as a borderless realm built for wealth protection, where secrecy and legal loopholes allow kleptocrats, organized criminals, and well-connected insiders to convert questionable fortunes into safe assets. Through reported cases and recognizable financial hubs, it explains how luxury real estate, shell companies, and citizenship by investment schemes can sanitize money and reputations. The result is an accessible account of why inequality deepens, why democratic institutions can be compromised, and why enforcement struggles to keep up. Moneyland is both a narrative of modern finance and a critique of the incentives that make dirty money welcome in supposedly clean economies. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Moneyland as a borderless system. A central idea is that illicit wealth does not simply flee one country and arrive in another. It travels through a purpose-built system that spans jurisdictions, contracts, and professional services. Bullo presents Moneyland as an ecosystem with its own rules, where the wealthy can step outside the constraints that bind ordinary citizens. In this world, the most important borders are not national ones, but legal and administrative ones, company registries, trust structures, secrecy laws, and compliance checklists. The book shows how global competition to attract capital has encouraged many places to design tools that prioritize confidentiality and asset protection. That competition turns certain cities into safe harbors and turns certain islands and microstates into factories for paperwork. This is not portrayed as a conspiracy, but as an accumulation of incentives. Governments want investment, professionals want fees, and clients want discretion. The outcome is a parallel realm that makes it easier to hide ownership, move funds quickly, and resolve disputes in friendly courts. By describing Moneyland as a system, the book helps readers see why scandal rarely changes outcomes. If one route closes, another opens, because the demand and the legal architecture remain. Secondly, the enablers, finance, law, and reputation laundering, Moneyland emphasizes that kleptocrats and crooks rarely operate alone. They rely on networks of enablers who may not see themselves as criminals, private bankers, wealth managers, corporate service providers, lawyers, accountants, public relations advisors, and compliance consultants. Bullo explores how professional distance and plausible deniability can transform risky clients into profitable ones. The services offered are often legal in isolation, yet collectively they can disguise beneficial ownership, blur the origins of funds, and intimidate critics. The book also highlights reputation laundering, where charitable donations, prestigious advisors, art purchases, and high-profile social connections help recast questionable wealth as respectable. It explains why this business persists, even when enforcement is visible. Penalties can be smaller than profits, regulation is fragmented across countries, and professionals can claim they only followed client instructions. Another theme is the role of complexity. The more layers of entities, nominees, and jurisdictions, the harder it becomes for journalists or investigators to establish control and intent. This is particularly damaging in democracies because it allows politically exposed figures to park wealth abroad while retaining influence at home. By mapping the enabling industry, the book reframes corruption as a service economy embedded in the global financial system. Thirdly, offshore secrecy, shell companies, and legal loopholes. A major topic is how secrecy is engineered. Bullo describes the mechanisms that allow assets to be held without clear attribution. Shell companies with nominee directors, trusts that separate control from benefit, and jurisdictions that minimize disclosure. These tools are not automatically illegal, which is part of the problem. They were often created for legitimate purposes such as privacy, tax planning, or asset protection, but they can be repurposed to hide proceeds of corruption, fraud, or sanctions evasion. The book outlines why beneficial ownership is the critical data point. Without knowing who ultimately owns an entity, banks and regulators are forced to rely on declarations that can be incomplete or misleading. Bullo also stresses how jurisdiction shopping works. Clients can pick a corporate registry that asks few questions, a bank that is comfortable with complicated structures, and a court system that favors confidentiality. Each step is defended as compliant with local law, yet the combined chain can defeat scrutiny. The narrative connects these legal designs to real-world consequences. Stolen public money is harder to recover, tax bases erode, and accountability weakens. By explaining the plumbing of offshore secrecy in plain terms, the book makes a technical subject understandable and shows why reforms often fail when they target only one link in the chain. Fourthly, luxury real estate and the conversion of cash into safe assets. Moneyland pays close attention to luxury property markets as a preferred destination for questionable wealth. Bullough argues that high-end real estate offers three advantages. It can absorb huge sums, it can be owned through opaque entities, and it is culturally seen as a normal investment rather than a suspicious asset. Cities with global prestige become vaults in concrete, where apartments function as stores of value more than homes. The book connects this dynamic to broader social costs. When property becomes a parking place for global capital, prices rise beyond local incomes, neighborhoods hollow out, and political pressure shifts toward protecting asset values rather than housing needs. Another issue is transaction opacity. In some places, professional intermediaries can structure purchases through companies or trusts, reducing the visibility of the true buyer. Even where anti-money laundering rules exist, enforcement can be uneven and responsibilities split among agents, lawyers, and banks. Bullough uses this to show how Moneyland leaks into ordinary life. You do not need to be a financial professional to feel its effects. They show up in rent, inequality, and the sense that rules apply differently to the powerful. Real estate becomes a case study of how dirty money can be transformed into stable, legitimate-looking wealth with long-term political and social consequences. Lastly, democracy, inequality, and the challenge of reform, the book ties Moneyland to the health of democratic societies. When leaders or elites can extract wealth and shelter it abroad, they have less incentive to build effective institutions at home. Public services deteriorate, cynicism grows, and politics becomes easier to buy. Bullough also links Moneyland to inequality in richer countries. Welcoming anonymous capital can boost asset prices, strengthen an economy on paper, and enrich service industries, while leaving many citizens feeling excluded from prosperity. Reform is portrayed as difficult because the system benefits influential interests. Financial centers gain jobs and fees, governments enjoy inflows, and professionals resist rules that increase liability. The book suggests that piecemeal fixes often disappoint. Closing one loophole may redirect flows elsewhere unless transparency and enforcement become coordinated. It points toward reforms that focus on ownership disclosure, stronger supervision of intermediaries, and better resourcing for investigators and prosecutors. Another theme is political will. Because Moneyland is transnational, it thrives when countries treat the issue as someone else's problem. Bullough frames the struggle as a contest between open markets and open records. Global capital can be welcome, but anonymity should not be. By emphasizing the stakes for governance and fairness, the book makes the argument that anti-corruption measures are not niche technicalities, but core defenses of democratic legitimacy. In conclusion, Moneyland suits readers who want to understand corruption as a modern, international business rather than a local moral failure. It is ideal for people interested in politics, economics, investigative journalism, law, or public policy, and for anyone puzzled by how obviously questionable fortunes can end up protected in respectable fortunes can end up protected in respectable places. The book can benefit a reader's life by sharpening financial and civic literacy. It helps you recognize why certain headlines repeat, why reforms are slow, and how hidden ownership affects housing costs, inequality, and trust in institutions. That awareness can influence how you vote, what policies you support, and how you evaluate claims about investment and growth. Compared with many books that focus narrowly on one country or one scandal, Moneyland stands out for explaining the connective tissue, the professional services, legal structures, and incentives that make the system durable. It also balances narrative case-based storytelling with a clear framework that readers can apply to new events. If you want a coherent picture of how dirty money is cleaned and normalized and why that process matters for ordinary citizens, this book is worth buying because it makes a complex global machinery understandable and hard to unsee. If you would like to support Oliver Bullough, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.